You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Final hour on this Thursday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Glad to have you on board. We'll check in with the head football coach at UConn, Randy Edsall, on why the school decided no football this year. Nota Begay from Golf Channel will join us. The PGA Championship is underway. This program brought to you by Mercedes-AMG. Be prepared for whatever comes your way. It's the all-new GT four-door coupe. Life's a race. Visit your local dealership for a test drive today. If you missed any of our interviews this week or any week from the Mercedes-AMG Man Cave, go to danpatrick.com. Watch and listen from inside the Mercedes-AMG Man Cave. Mercedes-AMG, driving performance. The Big Ten released its schedule yesterday. One game stood out to me as a Buckeye. Michigan versus Ohio State. The thing that stood out was the date, October 24th. Normally, it's a month later. It's supposed to be that Thanksgiving weekend. But if they can actually have the sports premier rivalry successfully play in October, I'm fine. I'm not going to complain about it, because you can look at the NBA and NHL as models. Playing in a bubble is far from ideal, but most fans adjusted and it's enjoyable to watch. College football, these are unique times, challenges. Players will be on campus with other students. It's going to be hard to control the infections, the outbreaks. The Big Ten and every other conference has a lot of hard work to do. And of course, I hope Ohio State beats Michigan, but I don't care when they play, just as long as they do play. The ACC announcing its schedule today, and also the SEC. I don't know if they're still leaving open the possibility of Georgia versus Georgia Tech, Clemson versus South Carolina, Florida versus Florida State. Have you seen that, Paulie? Any update on if they're going to have those two conferences meeting?
Nothing from the ACC or SEC yet, but the Notre Dame has an out-of-conference game, so I don't think the ACC can have out-of-conference games right now, but they haven't decided everything yet.
All right, Connecticut's not playing football this year. Their head coach is Randy Edsall, who joins us, an independent school as of this year. Coach, thanks for joining us. When did the department decide on this, that you're not going to have football this year?
Well, we've been going through this process, Dan, since really July the 1st. You know, once our kids came back to campus, you know, when we first started the testing process, where our young men had to take a test for the COVID and be negative before they could take a physical. And then the NCAA allowed us to have some voluntary workouts. And then starting July 12th, we were allowed to have workouts where you know, we could have 8 hours of lifting and conditioning or 6 hours lifting, conditioning and meetings. And then starting July 22nd, then we were able to get into 20 hours per week where we could do walkthroughs and then also have virtual meetings and do that. So as we were going through this whole process, there were situations that arose with our young people. We still haven't had a young man test positive yet. So that is really a good thing. The procedures and protocols that our university put into place has been very good. But what had happened through this whole process is we had three young men who came down with symptoms. You know, they got up in the morning and we have to fill out an app to say, you know, do you have these symptoms before you can even get into the building? And we had those young men who had to be isolated. It was three of them. And in July the 10th, July the 17th, and then July 25th. And with those young men having those symptoms, then you have to do the contact tracing. So when you do the contact tracing, now you're incorporating, in our first one, there were seven other young men. The second one, there was three. And then this last one, there was nine. So we've had 22 young men that there's been an average of 10 days in terms of getting the test back. And then when you take into the consideration that when you go on the field, there are certain things you can and cannot do. Social distancing. Yesterday was supposed to be our first practice. We went out on the field, but we weren't able to use helmets. We weren't able to have shields where guys could go block. We couldn't get up and play press coverage.
How are we going to pull this off, Coach? How is college football going to happen? You're at Connecticut. If you were still at Maryland, would you be playing football? Would you have a team this year take the field?
No, and I said that yesterday in the press conference. If I was a head coach and I was in a Power Five conference, whether it's the Big Ten or the ACC, you know, I would go to my administration and I would sit down with our players and I would say, we can't play football. And that's exactly what I did. I was on the field as all this was going on in July. I called my athletic director and told him, I said, there's no way we can do this with all the things that we have to go through. And that's even before you get into the game, because I don't think these kids are going to be could be properly prepared and conditioned to go in and play a game. I think you're going to see a lot of injuries because kids aren't prepared to go in. But like I said, if I was in the Big Ten, the ACC, I would be saying the same thing and doing the same thing. You know, money is not the object here. You know, schedule is not the object. As you go through this, we can't even use our locker room, Dan. You know, our kids can't even go in the locker room. We're using we have 16 people in the weight room lifting at one time. We couldn't go in and use our training room the way it needed to be, so you could have prevention of injuries where guys, we can only get two guys in our huge cold tubs, those things. Nobody can still tell me. And, you know, we had some people calling us and with the games, and then, you know, nobody can still tell me how you're going to do game day. You know, are you going to have to dress at the hotel, bus to the stadium? Are you going to have to, how are you going to social distance? The NCAA is putting you social distance on the sideline from 20 to 20. Kids have to wear masks if they're not in the game. But now, before the game, it's going to be okay to be in the locker room, or it's going to be okay at halftime to go in there. Then after the game, you know, right now here at UConn, we were in a bubble. But in 8 days, we got 8,000 students coming back. Our bubble is gone. Everybody else's bubble is gone.
Are coaches in denial, Randy?
I just think there's people afraid to make decisions, Dan. People in leadership positions are afraid to make decisions, and they're kicking the can down the road, and they're trying to say, okay, we're going to try to do everything that we can, knowing in the back of their mind it's probably not going to happen, and they're going to cancel the season. And that's why I give our players credit, because our players came to me and we were talking. They said, coach, there's no way we can have a season. And I concurred with them. So we sat down on Friday, this past Friday, myself, our leadership council, 12 young men, our athletic director, David Benedict, Dr. Cassiero, our team physician, our trainer. And I told our guys, you express your concerns to David and to Doc Cassiero and Bob. And they did. They want to play, Dan. There's no doubt about that. They want to play. It's not that they don't want to play, but they just are very concerned about their safety and the lack of answers that people can have because of this virus, because it's new and people don't know. And they just didn't think the risk was worth the reward.
He's Randy Edsall, the UConn head football coach. You had games against Indiana and Illinois. So Big Ten was going conference only. Ole Miss, they were going to go conference only. North Carolina, Virginia, conference only. How are you going to have a schedule if you decided to play? How are you going to fill in those weekends?
Well, there were people that were calling us, but we also have in this state, Dan, we have a travel ban.
I know.
And Connecticut has done a great job with this virus. Their numbers are way down. You know, Governor Lamont has done a great job. Okay, so if we went to play, the only two states, the only two games that we had on our schedule was UMass and Army that we could have played, because all those other teams that we were going to play, they were in states where there was a travel ban. There was people that we could have played. We had people calling us. People were calling David. Coaches were calling me. And but in terms of the protocols and everything else, you know, it wasn't. But it wasn't so much that, Dan. It was more so because our players didn't feel safe. And the one thing that I think has to happen, and I'm glad we made the decision and our young people had a say in it, a big say in it, okay? And that's the thing to me that's missing. I don't think these players, the people who are playing the game, first and foremost, don't have a say in what's going on.
No, I applaud you with that, Coach, because we've seen this at other coaches and other situations where, hey, you know, we value our student athletes until they're not on the same page with you. We saw this with Washington State. Hey, we're all in it together. Wait, you don't agree with me as the coach? Well, then we want you off the team. I'm glad that you're listening to them, because they don't have a singular voice who represents them. And that's what worries me the most about all of this. Those kids are going to play. They don't want to lose their scholarships. But I think there are a lot of coaches in denial right now. Have you heard from other coaches since your decision whether you want to make their names known nationally here?
I'm not gonna name names, Dan. But yes, I have gotten responses from coaches and have said thanks for speaking up and glad you had the guts to do what you've done. And I think, you know, again, all you got to do, Dan, and this is a whole problem, okay? You know, and I said this a couple days ago. Put the pluses, put the minuses down. There's only one plus, money.
Yeah.
It's the only plus is money. And you go down to minuses and there's much more. I think there's a lot of coaches, there's a lot of players that don't want to have the season. My assistant coaches have gotten calls from people. I've gotten calls from people, okay? I know our players appreciate them having a word because they know other people, and they say, Coach, we're glad we had a say, because those people don't have a say somewhere else. And that's what really bothers me the most is, you know, don't talk about the health and welfare of the student athlete if you're not going to go and listen to them and engage them in the conversation. Because as I've said, I'm not playing the game. David Benedict's not playing the game. Our board of trustees isn't playing the game. Our president isn't playing the game. Those are the guys. And you know what? All you got to do is take a look at, you know, in the NFL has a players union. They have a players association. Well, guess what? They were going to put them out there. No, the players association spoke up and they ended up getting things changed so those guys could go in and feel safe. And then they also, if they didn't want to play, they could opt out and there was options for them there. In the college game, like I said, everybody talks about that, but you're right. Nobody backs it up. Everybody walks away from it when push comes to shove.
Well, Coach, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time as always. And I don't know what you do over the next 5 months, but...
Well, we have a plan. You know, the thing is, I'm meeting this afternoon with our leadership council, and we're going to put the plan together. And what we're going to do, we're going to work to get bigger, faster, stronger. We're going to go on the field and do work. But again, our players are going to have a say in that in terms of what we do, along with our strength coach. And, you know, we're going to gear ourselves to 2021. And again, the spring was never an option because, to me, you talk about the health and welfare and safety of a student athlete. How could you go and play games all the way up to May and then come back and play another season?
Oh, I know. Yeah, not possible. Coach, thank you. We appreciate your time.
Okay, Dan. Appreciate it.
That's Randy Edsall. He's the head coach at Connecticut. Yeah, I'm going to guess you probably had some coaches who called up just to go, you know, what was the process like? And if the players don't want to play because of safety concerns, then great. Then listen to these players because they don't have a singular voice. They don't have a union representing them. And you have coaches who put the fear of God in you. If you decide that you're not going to play, you're going to lose your scholarship here. And I don't know if, you know, I think Connecticut is probably going to have to go down a level, maybe FCS eventually. I mean, it's not a revenue producing sport there. Playing in Hartford, they've had a couple of good years. They're an independent now, and you know, they're kind of on an island. But I could see where they would probably go down to FCS instead of staying at FBS. Yeah, Paul.
Like you've been talking about, if you put five conferences of powerhouse, money-hungry teams, and then that next year, almost like that 1AA FCS becomes the old school.
And it feels like that's where a lot of these schools are going to end up with the FCS. And maybe we label it something else, but I think your FBS is probably going to be your Power Five schools. And then, you know, there's a lot of programs that are going to lose money, and to them it'll be a lot of money. And that money is used for the other sports programs. And I think because of that, you're probably going to have to, it's almost like relegation. You're going to go down to FCS. And there's no shame in that, but that's probably the new economic model that's going to take over college football. But if they truly sat down and listened to these players and these players said it's not worth the risk, then I applaud you. You know, if there's something else attached to it that you couldn't come up with a schedule, that factors in. You're going to lose money, that factors in as well. Do I think it's just the singular, we listen to our players? No, but hopefully that was an overriding factor there at Connecticut. Let me get a couple of phone calls here. We'll take a break. Nota Begay, Tiger's good friend, works for Golf Channel. He will join us coming up in a little bit here. Royal in Iowa. Hey, Royal. Hey, Royal. Thanks, Royal. Gibbs in Virginia Beach. Hey, Gibbs, what do you have for me? We always love hearing from Gibbs. Hey, Gibbs.
What's going on, DP?
Hey, what do you have for me?
Being from southeastern Virginia, you know, Allen Iverson's hometown, big fan, always been, you know, my favorite player of all time. And a heck of a nice guy if you meet him in person. You know, he gets a bad rap in the media, but if you meet him one-on-one, man, totally down to earth, chill dude. But I got a stat of the day for you if you got some time.
All right, let's hit the music there for Gibbs in Virginia Beach.
Dan, no one is better served to speak about Michael Jordan's greatness than Allen Iverson. Michael Jordan faced 983 opponents head-to-head in his prime. Allen Iverson is the only player to outscore him head-to-head. Allen Iverson, 27.1 points a game. Michael Jordan,
20.1. Oh. Gibbs, you were cruising.
So close.
Yeah. Yeah, the Avalanche got him. Yeah. You can't pause. When that music hits, you got to go. And we always get, because guys will time this out. And if you pause, then you get hit by the Avalanche. So Iverson outscored Michael Jordan. He's the only player to outscore Michael Jordan head to head. Does that sound right from what Gibbs was saying? I do believe. All right, we'll take a break. We'll talk a little golf with, I'm going to talk a variety of things here with Nota Begay, Native American. Really, really concerned about COVID on, you know, the reservations. He's got family on reservations. You know, he's obviously a golf analyst, and he can talk about this golf course and Tiger changing his putter going into a major here. But some other things to talk to Nota about. Very interesting guy. 18 after the hour. We'll take a break here. We'll come back after this in the Dan Patrick Show. LifeLock. Man, it's good that we have LifeLock. A criminal scheme involving nearly 50,000 falsified unemployment insurance claims have been discovered by Maryland state officials. The scam adds up to more than $500 million in claims. You know, they're capitalizing on the hardships caused by COVID, and the fraud involved identity theft from previous security breaches. You got to make sure you understand about how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Because every day we put our information at risk on the internet. That's why it's a great thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security, that number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information is being used, they'll send you an alert. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock sees the threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year. The promo code is Patrick. 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to lifelock.com. Promo code Patrick for up to 25% off. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. If you have an idea for a podcast, then I have something for you. Next Great Podcast Contest. Simply go to nextgreatpodcast.com, get the details, submit your pitch for your podcast, and we will select up to 10 semifinalists, give them $1,000 to produce a pilot episode, and then we're going to let listeners from around the country on iHeartRadio vote their favorite podcast. And then I'm going to go into business with you. We're going to produce that podcast for a year and see if it sticks. NextGreatPodcast.com. Hope to work with you soon. He's Nota Begay. He is working with NBC Sports and Golf Channel analyst who joins us from TPC Harding Park. And being a Stanford alum, I'm sure that Nota is quite familiar with Harding Park. One of my favorite. I love that whole area there, Nota, where San Francisco Golf Club might be my second or third favorite golf club course that I've ever played. You got Olympic, and then you got Harding Park. That is a public course. What stands out the most at Harding Park to you?
Well, right now, in terms of how it's prepared, Dan, and great to be with you again. Thanks for having me, is the fact that it's set up championship
style to really test and bring out the best in these players. You know, we talk about this whole distance issue with Bryson DeChambeau and just how long the players have got Tony Finau. But this golf course, the way it's set up, and I walked out there yesterday, you know, there are some tight driving holes. And if you hit it in the rough, it's a hit or miss whether or not you get a good lie and have a chance to even make a play for the green. So it's going to be a balanced test for the guys. And I mean, they played in 90 plus degree heat, you know, 100% humidity. Last week, it's 55 degrees and the ball's going nowhere. So you or I would not want to be out there right now, but these guys are forced to be out there. And it's going to be interesting to see how it turns out.
If I said you could play in 50 degrees or 100 degrees, what would you pick?
100 out of 100 times I'd play in 100 degrees.
Just because the ball's going to go further?
Well, I mean, it was a sore back that took me out of golf. Oh, okay. So any time it gets cold, I get locked up and I lose about 20 to 25 yards off the tee. And it's no fun to play golf when you hit it nowhere, Dan. You know what I'm talking about.
I don't hit it anywhere. And I think, you know, DeChambeau is practicing social distancing with his drives to everybody else's. Is this a bigger jump than when Tiger first came out and he was out driving everybody? Is DeChambeau out driving people the way Tiger did when he first came on tour?
Well, what's really remarkable, if you want to make a comparative analysis in terms of across all sports. So Tiger was always long. Tiger was long as a junior. Tiger was long, one of the longest in college, and was long, one of the longest when he came out on tour. But what Bryson has done is he wasn't one of the longer players when he joined the PGA Tour. And what he's done with his approach is remarkable. It's like a major league pitcher that gets drafted, goes into, you know, gets onto a major league roster and shows up with a 92 mile an hour fastball. And then 3 or 4 years later is throwing 100. That's really the comparison. It just doesn't happen. And what he's been able to do, and what's most interesting about it, he's been able to do it without hurting himself. And he seems like he's on a sustainable track. You know, you'd have to talk to trainers to see how sustainable maintaining that much new muscle mass is. But he's done it really well, and he's kind of found the holy grail of golf, which is 20 yards of extra distance off the tee.
How are we not suspicious about that? Because if it was a pitcher who went from 92 to 100, Noda, we would go, But in golf,
yeah,
we don't always add that question mark at the end of somebody when we see a different physique. Like Brooks Koepka, I don't think that when I see him. But if he was in another sport, we might go, he's consistent. Noda, you know, Bryson is, I mean, this is pretty crazy, the size and the distance that he's created here.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think the only thing that I could sort of fall back on is the fact that the PGA Tour is, testing program in terms of performance enhancing drugs and all that has progressed, and it's at the same level as any other major sports in America. I mean, it's not new. We've been doing it now for a decade, and it's just one of those things where these guys are getting routinely tested. Not only are they getting swabs shoved up their nose every week to test for COVID, but they're getting regular urine samples and all of that stuff to make sure that there's nothing crazy going on. So I just, you know, all that aside, I got to give him credit for doing what he's done and making it work for him.
He's Noda Begay, NBC Sports Golf Channel analyst. Tiger changing his putter, Noda. you've seen that putter as long as you've probably known Tiger. You're loyal. You love your putter, and all of a sudden he's changing. How surprising.
Well, he's not the only one. I think we all love that putter just for all of the memories and the great moments it's given us over the last 30 years. And I've hit putts with that putter, and I've seen a whole shelf of about 50 different attempts to replicate that putter. And I asked him one day, we're in his house and he has a big wall with all the clubs that have been made for him over the years. And I go, not one of those 50 putters on the wall was even close. He goes, no, he goes, it just wasn't the right feel. And, you know, who am I to question the greatest golfer ever in the sense of what he's feeling as the ball sits on the face and comes off with the truest roll that we've ever seen. But, you know, he struggled. You look back to Genesis, he had 4 3 putts and a four putt. So he gave up six shots to the field and finished last that particular week. And then he comes back to Memorial and missed a series of short putts and struggled a little bit. So he's like anybody else. He's just out here trying to find something that can give him a little bit of hope that he can hole a few extra putts, because we've seen that his tee to green game is pretty solid when he's in good form. And I think he's looking good this week in his practice round.
Yeah, but it's weird. He's got a putting coach, right?
A putting advisor. I would say.
but I don't know. It feels like Steph Curry probably doesn't have a shooting coach. But like Tiger is the greatest. You can make the case greatest golfer of all time. But I guess is some of that just a security blanket that you sort of want somebody there? I mean, do you really need somebody there?
I strongly feel no. I think that you're better off in a lot of cases using people that have been around you. He's got a great friend in Rob McNamara, who has known him since junior golf. He's got a wonderful caddy in Joey LaCava. I think those are guys that would give you a better sense of where your setup is, because golf is so technical. You're talking about a quarter of a degree closed or shut at impact. The ball's going to spray 10 to 15 yards left or right of your target. And if you can't get the ball started on line when you're putting, there's really no way you can match up your read with your speed if you're not squaring up the face at impact. So any little adjustments, and we've seen it throughout the years, we've seen players put new putters in their bag that particular week and go out and win. It's just one of those things where you match up the mechanical motion and the setup of the equipment to the player's mentality, and it just creates magic.
You know who I'd go to?
Me.
No.
I'm a great putting coach, Dan.
No, Steve Stricker.
Yes. And Steve's been an advisor for Tiger through the years. They've partnered quite a few times in the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup. And, you know, he will rely on Steve from time to time to give him a little bit of feedback. And where Tiger really struggles a little bit with his setup is just his left hand. It gets a little off, and sometimes he just needs to readjust where his left hand sits to get the club on path.
How many times did you beat Tiger in college?
Quite a few, and over the years it's gotten more and more. But
the older you get, the better you were, Noda.
Absolutely, I carry that guy. So when he showed up on the farm, you know, I put my arms around him and I gave him the Charles Barkley talk, and I said, "Hey, you are going to be the strongest freshman in America." And he goes, "Great, try to stay humble." And I go, "Well, it's because you're going to carry all the seniors." Because we had four seniors and a freshman. "You're going to carry all our bags on our trip."
Also, you hazed him? Sport.
Oh, absolutely. He was a great sport about it. And finally, Casey Martin and myself were the co-captains of the team. And he came into the hotel room one night and said, "Hey, if I go out and I win a tournament, can I stop carrying these bags? You know, this is kind of old. You know, I'm Tiger Woods." And we go, sure, because you know he wasn't playing great at the time, and he went out and won the next week, which kind of sucked for us. We didn't get to give him our bags anymore.
Yeah, I've mentioned this before on the show. I have a nephew who used to sell products and deliver. He would go to reservations in North Dakota, and he would come back and he would say, "I know you talk about, hey, the Washington Redskins." People on these reservations don't care about that nickname. They want running water. They want people to help out with alcoholism and addiction. And they want, you know, they want normal things in their lives. Is that like your opinion of what's going on with the Washington football team? How much does it matter to you one way or another, Noda, if they're whatever they're called?
It has a huge negative impact on the perception that Native American people have about themselves. And I agree, there's a lot of people in my community that have sort of wondered, you know, why is this an issue? And I tell them it's an issue because of someone like me who came from the reservations and always felt slighted in a lot of situations. You walk into a job interview, you walk into one of these, you know, very prestigious golf clubs, and you know, there's a different feel, and we're trying to break down those stereotypes. We're trying to break down those misconceptions about who we are as Native American people. And we certainly don't want to be mocked, and we don't want to be held to a lower standard. And I think, you know, for my children and for many of my friends that raised their kids on reservations, this is a good step because they can look up and see that there are people out there that are advocating for a better perception of who we are as people and to be a little bit more respectful of everybody across the board. I think in this whole mission to produce a more equal viewpoint amongst all Americans, it's important to include all Americans.
And I know you started a foundation because I was thinking about you, that COVID has really ravaged some of these reservations here. And I think you've said publicly that you might lose family members because of COVID.
Yeah, I have lost extended family, people that I see at Christmas gatherings and Thanksgiving meals are gone. One of a really very close friend of mine on the Navajo Nation, who I grew up playing youth basketball, who grew up across the street from me in Windrock, Arizona. His grandma and my grandma lived across the street from each other. Both he and his brother, he's my age, he and his younger brother died on the same day from COVID-19. So it's hit very close to home. And it just kind of highlights the lack of infrastructure in our communities across the board, whether it's healthcare, whether it's first responders, and the ability to respond to this sort of health crisis. It's impacting the death rate amongst Native American communities is 20 times the national average. And,
wow.
It's a tough place, and we've got a long uphill climb, and I don't want people to forget about us as we continue to try and lift ourselves back up, because we are a proud people. We're capable. It's just sometimes you're up against something that's a little bit tough to overcome.
NB3 is the foundation. It's a COVID-19 response fund for Native Americans. And also he's creating the Nota Begay Junior Golf National Championship as well. Live from the PGA Championship. It's must see on Golf Channel. The winner of the PGA Championship will be who?
Brooks Koepka. Brooks Koepka.
Oh, wow.
Man.
I didn't even get to finish.
Sorry, there was a lag there in my signal, but yeah, I was already answering you before I got out of it. I mean, that's how we're connected, Dan. You know, I'm finishing your sentence.
Wow, we're like a couple now. I like that. So, Brooks Koepka, if I gave you Brooks Koepka or the field?
I take Brooks in a heartbeat. I just think he's trending, he's edgy, and, you know, he's going for, there's some cool things happening this week. There's Brooks going for three consecutive PGA championships in a row. There's Jordan Spieth trying to pull himself out of a slump, but if he's able to do it, wins the career Grand Slam, and then Tiger Woods going obviously for number 16 major in his career.
If it was Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau arm wrestling.
Oh man, arm wrestling! I'd probably take Bryson right now, but in a wrestling match, I might take like WWE style in a ring. I'd take Brooks. He's a lot meaner.
Maybe we see that this weekend. It feels like Brooks is not afraid to tweak Bryson DeChambeau a little bit there, Nota.
Hey, he's not. And there's an idea for a podcast, you know, PGA Tour players in the wrestling arena. I mean, I may just submit my entry.
Oh, now in the octagon.
Yeah, that'd be even better.
Tiger wouldn't do well in the octagon? He's got too many surgeries, right?
He's a little banged up. I think he'd do more running than wrestling.
Maybe 2005. Have you ever seen Tiger in a fight?
Two. You know, but he did. He did get robbed in a parking lot at Stanford one night. So I don't think he fought the guy because I think the guy. I mean, it's a serious thing. He actually did get robbed at knife point, which was an unfortunate incident. But he recovered. Nothing happened. He was good. And he's gone on to do some pretty good things.
See,
since.
I still maintain 2000 at Pebble Beach is the greatest golf performance in the sport's history.
Oh, by that whole year, Dan. I mean, we won't ever see any golf like that ever again. I mean, at least in our lifetime, the run of quality on those venues, historic venues, Pebble Beach, St. Andrews, and then he capped it off with that amazing win over Bob May at Valhalla, which was just something that I was glad to be a part. I played in all three of those events. So I was pretty lucky to be there.
How many strokes did he beat you by in the U.S. Open at Pebble?
Oh, we had to go there, didn't we?
Sorry.
We had to go there. Well, let's just say he beat second place by 15
shots. Oh, I know.
I was well back in that.
And knowing Tiger, he might remind you of that, you know, just if you bring up I beat you in college, he would probably remind you of a couple other things there. He could humble you quickly, probably.
Yeah, he humbles me. But I got a couple. There's two in my hip pocket. So in 1994, we won a national championship at Stanford as a team without Tiger. And then we replaced our worst player, our fifth man, with Tiger Woods, and we had four returning seniors the next day. We were the bona fide number one ranked team in the country in 1995, and we lost in a playoff. We finished second. So I always hold over his head that he made us the worst team when he arrived at Stanford, and that I graduated with my degree in economics, but he didn't graduate. But then he always comes back, and at the time, but now it's different. He used to say he has four masters. But now he has five. So
his master's degree.
His master's degree.
Hey, it's great to talk to you, and have fun this week. We'll be watching the golf there. Thank you again. Always a pleasure.
I will, Dan.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
That is Noda Begay. We'll take a break here. Last call for phone calls. What we learn. What's in store tomorrow? Right after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live every day at youtube.com/The Dan Patrick Show. Noda Begay talked about Tiger Woods, his freshman year at Stanford, where he was held at knife point with a knife to his throat. So he was 18 years of age, coming back from an outing at around 11 o'clock at night, and he was grabbed from behind, a knife held to his throat. They took a chain and a watch and then knocked Tiger to the ground, striking him with the handle of the knife. He said he was not injured, and he said his jaw was sore, so I just took some aspirin. I don't remember this story. I don't remember hearing this story. But this is when Tiger was 18. Live from PGA Championship. That'll be coming up tonight on Golf Channel. I love West Coast golf because you can watch it up till like 10 o'clock at night on the East Coast. So, and these guys are wearing, it's a little chilly out there in San Francisco. They're wearing long sleeve. They're wearing sweaters or pullovers here at Harding Park. And that you can feel that air out there. You know, when you get off the plane, when you go to Arizona or Florida and you kind of walk off and it feels like you're putting a sweater on, it's so hot. When you go into San Francisco or later in the day in some of those golf courses, it just gets heavy and it gets chilly. But Noda was good. I really enjoyed talking to him. I think he's a very, very interesting guy. Reggie Miller is going to join us on the program coming up tomorrow. We'll talk to him about the Lakers' struggles offensively, like the biggest concerns that they're going to have when they go into the postseason. Also, who does he like to emerge as the eighth seed in the West? Final results of the poll question, McLovin.
So hour two and three was, who do you want to see as the number eight seed in the bubble? And the choices were Grizzlies, Pelicans, Blazers, Suns, and Spurs. There was a runaway blowout winner, and I don't think you'll guess who it is.
Pelicans?
No, it was the Blazers. I would have thought the Pelicans would have run away with it.
Well, that's probably our Portland fans voting for their Blazers there.
And they're good and be good, too.
Yeah, they're fun. Yeah, like Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum. I mean, they got a good balanced team there. Not as good as the Indiana Pacers, apparently, according to Dan Dockage. But, you know, they're trying to improve. Solid and improving. This day in sports history, Paulie.
Got a few, Dan. 1890, Cy Young achieved his first major league victory. He would go on to win 511 in his career, all while never winning the Cy Young Award. Satchel Paige in 1952, Dan, at age 46, became the oldest pitcher to complete a major league baseball game. And here's a little quiz. In 1969, the first fair ball to hit completely out of Dodger Stadium occurred. Who did it? It was not a Dodger. It was a visiting NL player. 1969. Power hitter.
Daryl Strawberry.
69.
Oh, 69.
A guy who was great in the late 60s, really good in the 70s.
I was thinking Willie Stargell.
That's a great guess, and you got it, Dan. I'm going to give you 10 bonus points on that. Pop Stargell, 69, 506 feet.
Nice. Nice.
Nice job.
Yeah. By his launch angle, you know, you could tell by his launch angle. Let's see. Anything else that we missed today? Todd slept in the studio last night. We don't have power. At least McLovin does. Everybody else doesn't. Todd slept in a reclining chair.
Chicago Bears reclining chair just on the other side of the wall.
And so you came here in the man cave to sleep.
I was ill-prepared. I was wearing like a very thin T-shirt and shorts, and I didn't realize, especially in the room I chose, the chair was comfortable, but it was next to a big buzzing generator sound of the, you know, that handles a lot of the technical equipment. And
but we have a couch right over there.
I know, but that's where we're there every morning, and I knew I was going to get grief if I ended up sleeping over there.
We would never have known you slept on that couch. Did you bring a blankie?
I did not bring a blankie. I should have brought like heavy pajamas or a sweatshirt or something. But
did you bring dinner?
I brought some yogurt and I brought some like pretzel rods. I didn't have like an actual real dinner. I had a late lunch and I thought that was going to cover it.
But why wouldn't you bring a blanket in here?
I didn't realize it was going to be that cold. I had never really been into that specific room, but the IT guy said that's a comfortable chair and that would be a good place. And I took him up on that idea. And then the next thing I know, there's a...
Yeah, but the IT guy is really good with computers, not sleeping.
That's true. He's not like some kind of sleep expert.
Like you want to know about a nap, ask Paulie.
Yeah. My wheelhouse.
Yeah. Couldn't
you? It was tough. By 3:09 in the morning, I went back to my chair right where I'm sitting, and I just called it. I got my sleep in for the night.
So you've been up. 3:09. You've been up since 3:09.
I'm a little riled up. I could use a. I'm going to crash like any minute now. I'm trying to hold on for this next 2 minutes of the show and not just totally collapse.
Well, we're all counting on you.
I appreciate it.
Yes, McLovin.
I just want to clarify my text about how my AC was too chilly was not funny. No.
It wasn't.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
No, because we have no internet. We had no TV. And then McLovin goes, I'm trying to decide what I'm going to watch tonight at home. Little chilly with this AC.
It was notable silence on the text response.
It was funny.
Paulie jumped in and said, Paulie likes a mean joke.
Oh, yeah. Paulie goes, respect. Let's see. Let's go around the room. Todd, what did you learn today?
We wonder why we're not holding Mike Trout more accountable for the Angels not being a perennial playoff team.
Yeah. And maybe holding him accountable, it's, you know, a little heavy-handed there. It's just, I don't know if he's going to, I don't know what that playoff resume is going to look like. And that'll be a shame because you want to see great players on the biggest stage. McLovin?
I was reminded that the Pacers were in the playoffs. In the bubble because Dokic called in. Mm. I'd forgotten they were there.
Yeah. And they're going to be in the playoffs. Seton O'Connor.
UConn football, we're doing it for the kids.
Yeah. Is that the motto? That's their slogan?
We're doing it for the kids.
Wow. Rare. Paulie Ester.
Tiger, I should say Fritzy, surprisingly couldn't figure out the complexities of a reclining chair and slept upright last night.
Not only that, I needed Paul to explain how the TVs were working. I was trying to take the volume off of one channel and put it on another. Pressing the buttons and it
anything.
Wasn't working.
You're going to love this story when I tell you.
It's useless.
What did I learn, Todd?
Nota predicts Brooks Koepka will win the PGA Championship. He would take him over the entire field.
Raycon wireless earbuds, the way to go. Get 15% off your Raycon order at buyraycon.com/Patrick. That's buyraycon.com/Patrick. Thanks for joining us. We'll do it tomorrow. Reggie Miller will join us from the bubble. Have a great day. Talk to you then.